Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Brilliant, Mark standing in for Anthony Reicher. Very good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm being an imposter this week. What can I say?
Yep, we know your crafty kind. But Israel, of course, also starting to see not great signs around the whole COVID story.
Well, we have had a slight increase in the amount of COVID cases, and we can attribute it to one or two individuals who went abroad on vacation, came back and did not go into quarantine or did not complete the full quarantine. We had one case of that in Modi Inn, and the person responsible is being prosecuted for that.
Wow.
This is how deadly serious we are taking it. So we do have quite a number of kids in quarantine here, as well as the town of Binyamina, which is between Tel Aviv and Haifa in the north. That town has been designated yellow and have come under restrictions. And again, it's the same case. It's somebody who went abroad, in this case to Cyprus, came back and did not quarantine. And the Ministry of Health, the government, have been very, very specific. If you are going abroad and you're coming back, you still have to observe the laws of quarantine. It doesn't matter if you have been vaccinated. So now there is a massive drive to vaccinate kids between the age of 12 and 16, because invariably this is where it's coming in from. And last night, addressing the nation from Ben Gurion Airport, Prime Minister Bennett said that if you are coming into Israel, you will have to undergo PCR testing. That's serological testing. Masks will be mandatory in Ben Gurion Airport. He recommends that we wear masks indoors again, just as we were getting used to not wearing them. But he's also said not to panic, to remain calm. This is not national. It's very much regional. But, you know, we just want to err on the side of caution. And anyone coming in to Israel who hasn't been vaccinated has to quarantine. There's no two ways about it, and we will be tightening those quarantine, or that quarantine management. So really not taking any chances from this side. The Prime Minister has also appealed to Israelis that unless you absolutely have to travel abroad, please do not do so, and we will be reconvening our coronavirus cabinet. But then again, he also stressed, don't panic. We're just making sure that we treat this with the attention that it needs before it becomes something more drastic.
I think a couple of notable points here. The first one being that, and that's a lesson for South Africans, and I think maybe where we're getting a little bit wrong, is we seem to think that once you're vaccinated, you're protected. It's very clear that you aren't, that you might still be able to get the virus and that you will be able to spread it. And that's exactly what's happened in Israel. The other idea and the other concept that I think is very valuable is that Israel is looking at it regionally. So whereas we're looking at this across South Africa, Gauteng has exactly the same rules as other places, but we're in the midst of an incredibly high surge. We should have different rules, or we should have had different rules to other areas. And I believe that that is something that Israel is doing fairly smartly.
But we also have to remember that we are a sort of military orientated country. So it's very easy to kind of mobilize us. And at the outset, when he was not prime minister but serving as defense minister, Naftali Bennett, during the first wave of coronavirus in Israel, was quite strong in the policies and in the education of just what to do, where to lock down, how to go about doing it, while still retaining some kind of empathy. And it's something that many are remarking that we're starting to see as the Prime Minister, that, you know, he's taking very, very, I won't say tough decisions, but he's taking very precautionary decisions and making sure that it's communicated with the public as much as possible,
which I think is critical. Tell us about the Lehava, organization?
Well, this is very interesting. You know, seen over the last couple of months, the rise in a Jewish supremacist organization called Lahava. Lahava were very much at the forefront of the activities during Operation Guardians of the Wall, you know, trying to stir up angst against the Arab community. And yes, we do have extremists within that community as well, and we know exactly where it's coming from. We had heard the rhetoric from Hamas, you know, pushing for an uprising within the Arab-Israeli community in the run-up to Operation Guardians of the Wall. But on our side, we also have Lahava. This is an extreme organization. It's not even termed as far right. It's termed as Jewish supremacist. These were the groups largely responsible for mob attacks and attempted lynchings on Arabs. These are the groups that you would have seen last week at the flag parade, you know, singing death to Arabs and really chanting this inflammatory, insightful kind of rhetoric. Well, the chairman of the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, Ram Ben Barak, is from Yesh Atid, as well as the public security minister, Omer Bar-Lev of the Labor Party. They have put forward a motion to our defense minister, Benny Gantz, and to the attorney general, Avichai Mandelbult, calling on them to use 2016 legislation which seeks to ban these kind of organizations. So they want Lahava designated as a terror group, and they are saying they are using the exact same kind of rhetoric as a terrorist organization would use. And also what they want to do as well is they want to crack down and dismantle the non-profit which is part of Lahava. It's called the Rescue of the Jewish People. That's their fundraising arm. We know from Hamas, Hamas operate in two tiers. They have sort of their public affairs and public concerns, and then they also have their military wing. And you've got to kind of break up the fundraising and the transfer of funds there. The same with Hezbollah. Hezbollah was designated as a guerrilla group for many, many years. It is now seen as a terror entity by many countries, including Australia, who want the whole of Hezbollah banned. That's according to parliamentarians there. But here we want to also dismantle any kind of means of raising funds for this organization. You know, often the way these organizations are set up is they have a non-profit arm which allows them to raise all kinds of money to carry out whatever they perceive their mandate to be.
So it'll be interesting to see how this group evolves. Hopefully they won't. Let's talk about the U.S. clamping down on terror websites. I thought that was a fascinating development, and I have to say I was quite impressed with the Biden administration around this.
Well, I have to say, so am I. Maybe with a little bit of hope, they are listening to us, listening to our concerns, and of course are monitoring as closely as we would. But I think several websites got a bit of a shock when they opened up and they got a message to say, this website has been seized. I don't know how quite you seize a website.
I was just going to say, where do you even take it to and how?
One of those is Press TV, which is the Iranian news channel, and they got a message to say, this domain, Press TV, has been seized by the United States government in accordance with a seizure warrant. And of course, it's all kinds of bureaucratic law babble from there on. But they got seized, Al Alam, Palestine Today, various others were also taken down. And interesting is that the U.S. is said to be working not just with Israel, but with Saudi Arabia as well to block these kind of websites. Now, Saudi Arabia, we can understand they have threats coming in from Iranian-backed militia like the Houthi that are in Yemen that attack Saudi installations, Saudi nationals. And, of course, our major concern, as we've been speaking Over the last couple of days is the regime change in Iran. Ibrahim Raisi, who is seen to be more extreme than Ahmadinejad or Rouhani. He's known as the executioner or the butcher. He's cause for great concern. And the U.S., Saudi, and Israel not taking any chances and making sure that these websites, which are hotbeds of incitement and recruitment, are shut down quickly.
Fascinating to see that during the Trump presidency, where we had the situation that he was removed from Facebook and Twitter, there was a lot of outcry around the fact that it wasn't happening on the other side. Not that Trump, I think, is a right-wing extremist, but a lot of his material was removed from the internet, and now we're seeing that it's happening maybe in a little bit more balanced way, which I guess has to be good news.
Well, you know, in this case, these are websites. Social media is another major concern. You know, we have the concern that the Ayatollah is still allowed to tweet whatever he wants. You and I are very active on social media, especially Twitter, and we see some horrendous anti-Semitism, anti-Israel rhetoric, which doesn't seem to go checked. It's allowed to, you know, flagrantly be propagated. And yet, former President Trump, he's been kicked off Twitter and he's suspended from Facebook. And it's a horrible double standard, but it's also something more dangerous than that. It's allowing personal partisan politics to get in the way of looking at the bigger picture. When is it personal partisan politics, and when is it freedom of speech, and when is it a clamp down of hate speech and incitement?
Let's just talking about hate. There's been a lot of discussion around the Israel-China relationship, and it's been a very, very good one. But recently, Israel seems to have either willingly or by coercion condemned China because of the treatment of the Uyghur Muslims at the UN Human Rights Council. Tell us about, firstly, the context of the Israel-China relationship.
Well, it's a very interesting relationship. It's a very strong trading relationship, one where we've seen the Americans try and, I don't want to use the word influence, but try and explain quite strongly that
maybe
you know,
lobby.
Israel should take a step back from China. Some concerns inside Israel that the Chinese have bought two major Israeli brands, and there's a want to try and prevent other major Israeli brands from going the same way. But we had that charm offensive from former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo before he left office here to try and say to Israel, don't do so many major deals with the Chinese. Thank you very much. There was the deal for the running of the Haifa port, which could have gone to the Chinese, and it didn't in the end, coincidentally after Mike Pompeo's visit. And Israel has been very cautious around criticizing China so much, but in a very, very unusual move, and maybe with a little bit of pressure from the Americans, Israel joined 40 other Western countries on a I need another cup of coffee, clearly. A Canadian-led resolution at the United Nations Human Rights Council condemning China for the treatment of Muslim Uyghurs. You and I have spoken about it a number of times, the tremendously brutal way that Uyghur Muslims are being treated in China, being rounded up into concentration camps, the woman undergoing forced sterilization, the re-education, I say that in inverted commas, of Uyghur Muslims. And now Canada put forward a motion at the UNHRC, it's about time, and Israel was amongst 41 countries voting on that resolution, which calls for the immediate, meaningful, and unfettered access of independent observers to visit the Xinjiang region where these concentration camps and this brutality against Muslim Uyghurs and other minority groups are being carried out.
Absolutely horrific situation, and I'm glad one way or another that Israel joined in the condemnation. It's just about to go 8 o'clock. Rolene Marks standing in for Anthony Reich. Thank you. As always, we'll chat to you tomorrow morning.